Yeah, thanks again to everyone that's read, helped us open the meeting, and take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Warm welcome to any visitors with us tonight, and a massive welcome to any newcomers that might be in the room, and we hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. Okay, so like I said, we do have a speaker who's going to share their experience, strength and hope with us for 40, 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with. I'm going to hand you over to Penelope, who's going to introduce them. So Penelope, over to you.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's it's my great delight and honor to
Hi, Penelope.
introduce. Hi, I'm Penelope
Hi,
Almaden.
Penny.
Sorry,
Hi, Penelope.
overwhelmed by the honor of introducing this lady because she is very special and has a very strong message. I remember when I first met her. Quite a few years ago in the speaker meeting in London, she had something that I thought, yeah, she's gonna, she's got this. And and I've had an ongoing relationship and watched her grow from potential to into the woman she is today. And I think she'll share some of her journey. Which she shared with me, and so it is my privilege to introduce Tammy to everyone who's going to who she's celebrating a clean time as well recently, and so it's over to you, Tammy. Please come and share with us.
Thanks,
Thank you,
Penelope.
Penelope. Thank you,
Thank you,
Penelope.
Penelope.
Penelope. Thanks, Penny.
My name's Tammy, I'm an addict.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi,
Hello,
Tammy.
Tammy.
Hi, Tammy.
Yeah.
That just totally took me by surprise. That's one of the most beautiful things that I've ever heard anyone say about me, ever. And what a blessing it is to have you in my life. Thank you for asking me to share this evening. I've my head's been a little bit all over the place the past week, on and off, not obsessing about the share, on and off, thinking, oh, I should say this and I should say that. And, I'm able to just let go of it and see what happens. So, yeah. I did celebrate a clean time birthday recently. That was the beginning of last month. Which is fantastic, one day at a time and all that. I am a very different woman today than the woman who first found the fellowship, probably going on about 11, 12 years ago now. And I first found this fellowship through another, I was attending another fellowship and I wasn't getting it. I just wasn't getting it. I put down the alcohol and I thought that it was still okay to go out and use everything else that I was using. I would be in that meeting, in that fellowship, and as soon as I get out the door, I'd be on the phone to my friends and we'd be calling it on. And yeah, I arrived in NA full of pain, angst, rage, a lot of fronts, a lot of masks. Very bold, very, keep people at arm's length away from me, I'd want to fight you whether you're male or female. I would have friends that would be telling other friends, no, 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 don't piss her off. This is, it's really upon reflection, it's almost like I've lived two different lives, I had a life of abuse. I come from a family of one of six children and, not one of us finished high school. My mum was virtually illiterate. My dad wasn't, is probably a little bit illiterate as well. And, we weren't necessarily encouraged to do homework and everything at home, or encouraged to go on and pursue studies or go to the library or anything like that. And I remember also going to church on a Sunday, and this is when I was young, when I was probably 8 or 9 years of age. And it wasn't until, you know, I'd gotten to my mid to late teens that I realised that we lived a very different life behind closed doors. You know, we were like in a Pentecostal church when I was a child, and people would come back to our house after church. And yeah, it's learning what I've learnt about my family and what happened within my family. It's a very different life behind closed doors. I don't necessarily personally share everything that's happened to me in the rooms. I have a sponsor for that. You know, I will one day feel a lot more comfortable. However, you know, whether or not it's nature or nurture that's made me an addict is something I don't think I'll ever be able to decide. However, I know that once I put a substance in me, that makes me, my reaction to it makes me an addict. And yeah, I've had my children taken out of my care due to the disease of addiction. You know, they're in my care up until about the summertime of 2008. And I was binge drinking and using every weekend. So drinking is using, because alcohol is a drug. And I hadn't spoken to my mother in about 5 years at that point. And she had a collapsed lung. And so they had to, yes, be admitted to hospital. They punctured it like 7 or 8 times to get it back there. Inflated or whatever it is, the technical terms, medical terminology, I'm not necessarily sure. And it sparked something within me that wasn't really great. And I went on a massive downward spiral that started. And, you know, my children, I wouldn't feed them. You know, Pia had to steal food for her brother to eat, my son Jaden. I would go to the local pub or like club or whatever, and you know, I would bring the school and bring my ex-husband and tell him to go and pick his son up, and then Kia would be knocking on the neighbors' doors wondering where I am, where I was. You know, they lived a horrible life. It wasn't always like that. In the end, it was. And I can remember the day that they were taken out of my care like it was yesterday. And that's something that I've gotten a lot better with over time, being in recovery and doing the work on myself, that I don't beat myself up so much about now. You know, to a normal person that didn't have the disease of addiction, that would have been a massive red flag. And they would have been, yeah, I need to sort my life out. And for me, no, it wasn't. It was like, you know, a traffic light that went green, like, go. And, yeah, I took off. And that downward spiral took me to some very dark places. You know, I ended up being in a psychiatric unit for 9 months. I lost the house that we were living in. Like, my children were placed in the care of my ex-husband. You know, I ended up mixing with other addicts and then ended up living with them. And, yeah, you know, two of my friends I've laid to rest, you know, that I used with. And we would be in the room in this one little, like, bedroom in this share house for, like, homeless people, you know, addicts, everything else. And we would be using for 3 or 4 days at a time. And I remember looking at people going to work in the morning, like, 7 o'clock in the morning, and we'd be like, they're some idiots, they're wankers, they're not living, they don't know what life's about. How little did I know? You know, how deluded was I? I believe the disease of addiction just seriously distorted my view. It does distort my view of perception of reality. And, you know, coming into the fellowship, it was like a breath of fresh air in a way, you know. No one told me to, you know, go away, or, you know, you need to be this or you need to be that. And no, I've still got one of my friends, Suzanne, is like, I think she's 15, 16 years now, 17 years. She remembers me when I first came around that summer. And she came to do a main stair for when I was in my face-to-face old home group a couple of months back. And I sat there next to her and shared back, and I said, do you remember me when I first came around? And the look on her face was like, yeah, you know? And I just came in like a bull in a china shop. I had no way of processing anything. You know, I used to always wear a hoodie, and, you know, I remember one time being out front of a meeting, and I couldn't go in because I was so pissed off and so upset. And my sponsor at the time was standing next to me, and my hood was up. And my thing was, if my hood was up and you couldn't see my eyes, don't come near me. And someone came to say hello to me, and my sponsor just politely went, no, I'm done. I just give her a minute, because I think it was something to do with my daughter's social worker. I think I had some issue with them. I might have actually lost contact because of the way I spoke to my daughter's social worker. You know, I walked around for such a long time with a massive chip on my shoulder, thinking that the world owed me something. And I could do the victim mentality very well. And, you know, I could blame people. I could, you know, point the finger. I could do all that. I'm very angry. And, you know, yeah, I got to about 18 months clean. This is the first time I came in. And, you know, I was in a relationship, and that relationship broke down. And on the back of that relationship breakup, I relapsed, you know, and a relapse is long in the post before it happens. And it started with my behaviours of, you know, thinking that I didn't need to go to meetings anymore, thinking that I didn't need to work with my sponsor anymore. My sponsor at the time actually let me go. And, yeah, I was out for about 8 months. And in that time, I threatened to kill my ex-husband and someone else and was arrested and put in a unit on a police section. And they let me go. The psychiatrist let me go within 24 hours, which was a bit weird upon reflection. So the same police officer that arrested me and took me into custody, I don't know how it happened. She ended up on my doorstep again 2 or 3 hours later with another two police officers arresting me and taking me back into custody. Because she believed me. I wasn't right. You know, I had the worst psychosis of my life in my relapse. And the things that were going through my head, it's just terrifying. And, you know, I had to tell the police because, you know, I didn't want to act out on this stuff. And, yeah, you know, my ex-husband in my relapse petitioned me to take my son back home to Australia permanently, separating the children. As Tia was in foster care, he put Tia in foster care in 2010. And I didn't really, it wasn't about me not seeing him, it was about them being separated, because at that point I hadn't seen or spoken to my son for 3 years. And I was just so, I had no way of processing anything, you know, I just went completely and utterly mad. And I remember being in the cell and being a constant, because I think I was pacing the cell a lot and it wasn't good. And I remember being constant. I don't remember everything. I remember little bits. And the constant means you've got two police officers sitting at the door and your door's open. It's just keeping an eye on you, you know, for mental health and all that. And I don't know what happened to me in that cell. I was reading magazines, and then at one point I was reading a Bible. I don't know what happened to me. Something within me changed, because if someone had told me 9 months before that, when I had clean time, this is what's going to happen to you. I was so full of myself, but then I thought that I had recovery because I had thought I had the external stuff. You know, I had the boyfriend, I had the job, I had my flat, I was seeing my kids, all this stuff. Well, you know, things here, not dead. And I wouldn't have believed it. Jails, institutions, and death. You know, relapse is a part of my journey. It's not a part of my recovery. And by the grace of God, I was in the docks, I was in court, and I was let off with a fine. And I came back to NA the next day, and I haven't looked back. I hit the ground running. I was that desperate. They are so desperate. You know, when it talks about, like, the consequences being so glaringly obvious, it was just, what else was I meant to do? You know, the next part, the next thing for me would have been death. You know, so I came back and all of my friends were like, where have you been? We're glad you're back. Right, sit down. You know, get some service. You know, that one of the most loving things about NA is they just wanted to know that I was okay. And they just gave me a loving place to be. You know, I remember being on the phone to one of my friends in recovery, I think every day for the first week or so. And he's like, he just said to me, yeah, Tam, get yourself a female sponsor and start working this stuff now. And I think I was 6 or 7 days clean. And I asked my old sponsor to sponsor me the next day and hit the ground running. You know, that was nerve-wracking. Sponsor, you know, asking, it's like kind of asking someone on a date or something, you know. You'd be like, will you sponsor me? You know, making yourself vulnerable and possibly open to rejection and everything else. And you know, I remember when I was 2 years clean and she said to me, yeah, you hit the ground running. If I told you to jump, you said, how high? And that's because I had the gift of desperation, because I didn't want to go back to the insanity of where I was. And being in recovery and doing the work on myself, getting a service commitment is so important for me. You know, it taught me how to dress up and show up, how to commit to something greater than myself, to be a part of something greater than myself. Give back, you know. I was the sort of addict that would steal your wallet and help you look for it. And I did, you know. I hit the ground running, and I think I had a service position in every meeting, every Chelmsford meeting that I went to for the first 2 years. I was living in a share house once again, pattern of behaviour, cycle of behaviour that I was in. I was living in another share house with people with, like, addiction issues that were, like, homeless and things like that. It was a massive two houses knocked into one. It wasn't a clean and sober living house. People couldn't use in the communal areas. They could use in their bedrooms. So, literally, there was 5 NA meetings a week in the city where I live. I was in them, and I was doing service because that got me to them. And I did that for the first 2 years. And I would supplement the other two with, like, other fellowship meetings. And, you know, that's something as well. Like, I'll never knock another fellowship, you know, NA for me. I've got plenty of friends in those fellowships and it works for them. Just NA is my home, you know. And if NA is not available wherever I'm going, then, and there's another fellowship available, then I'll go, you know. So, yeah, NA has given me so much. Through working the program, doing the work on myself, I was able to chip away at everything that wasn't me. And I love the analogy that my sponsors spoke about the artist, the sculptor and the it's a sculpture of an elephant, and someone kind of, I can't remember the exact quote, it's something along the line of, well, how did you make it? And then they just chipped away at everything that I think the artist or the sculptor said, he just chipped away at everything that wasn't the elephant. And I feel like that's what working the steps has done for me and does for me. I was able, and working the spiritual principles that are with the steps and the traditions, it's like, I was able to learn empathy and compassion for others, unconditional love, self-acceptance, surrender. Like I was thinking earlier today, I think I initially used to think of surrender as when the, like, an army or something could be on the side of the road or something waving a white flag, you know, and it's kind of like that, you know, but the evidence is blatantly clear that my will and running in my, and how I was running, being in my life just clearly wasn't working. So doing the work on myself and getting a higher power of my understanding has really been so important for me. You know, I came into recovery with a preconditioned idea of what that was, and I had to deconstruct that. You know, I had to deconstruct it, and I had to formulate it to look like what it means to me. You know, what do I believe in? And that's one of the most loving things about NA, that no one has ever told me what to believe. None of my sponsors have, you know, none of my friends do, you know, and I had that freedom to be able to cultivate that for myself, and it changes and it shifts, you know. Through doing the work on myself, I've been able to have a relationship with my children. My daughter's always kind of been in my life. And, you know, when I got to about, I think it was 6 months or a year clean, it was a year clean, she came to my clean time birthday at a meeting. She sat through the whole meeting. And I remember her not long after that saying to me, like, if you relapse, Mum, I'm gone. And here's me thinking, I'm so clean, blah, blah, blah. Once again, I pick up the phone to one of my dear friends, Suzanne. And I'm talking to Suzanne, and I'm like, oh, I'm so upset. I'm in recovery now. She should be able to see this. It's like, Pam, it's a boundary. They're looking up. She's looking after herself. This isn't about you. And it's like, oh. You know, I came into recovery with a massive ego and a chronically non-existent self-esteem. And I had such a massive ego, and don't get me wrong, on a bad day I still can have a massive ego. Learning to think less of myself and more of others, yeah, it teaches me that I'm not, you know, that I haven't been great, you know, that I haven't treated people well, and that if someone's coming to me and they're telling me how they're feeling about, you know, making an amends, that's not in step nine, you know, which I've done with my daughter and I've done with other people, and they're telling me how what I've done to them, I've just got to sit there and shut up. I'm not in any position to say anything. You know, all I have to say is, okay, what do you need from me now? You know, I remember I've had more than one amends with my daughter, and that's been probably the most rewarding and painful that I've gone through. I'm still yet to go through that with my son. He came back into my life in 2018, and yeah, I'm going to be a grandma. His girlfriend's pregnant. She's due on the 30th of August. You know, yeah, that's all because of NA. You know, I've been gainfully employed, you know, for like just over 6 years. I just left one company that I worked for 6 years, you know. In recovery, you know, I thought that when I was out there using, I thought my world was so big. How small it was. In recovery, the world is my oyster. You know, and I've been to my first 2 years. I went to college. I went to college 2 days a week. I'm a qualified holistic therapist, and I'm also a qualified beauty therapist. And that's, you know, at the my old sponsor kicking my butt. You know, because like I left school when I left home, and I spent 2.5 years on and off the street as a teenager. So I had no qualifications or anything, and I didn't think I was smart enough. And I was so petrified of going to college. My sponsor at the time, bless her, she's Glaswegian, very softly spoken. However, when she spoke, I listened. And I was so scared. And she goes, it's only 2 days a week. You're not working. Get off your butt and go. It's like, okay, rightio, I'm going, you know. I wish I could articulate how much gratitude I have for the fellowship and what it's given me, the ability to have a relationship with women that I didn't have before recovery, because in the end I was like, oh, I hang around with men because women are so bitchy and all that crap. You know, and it's not the case. I have had some of the most loving women in my life, and my sponsors today and sponsees and my friends in recovery. And one of my friends in particular, I've been friends with for 9 years, and she's my sister from another mission. She's not my soul sister. I don't know where I'd be without her, you know. All these things that NA has taught me, how to be a friend, how to be loving and kind to people, how to be loving and kind to myself, to nurture myself. All of these things that were alien to me when I was out there using, you know, and how to turn up and show up for others and not be selfish, be selfless, you know, and think of myself less. And in thinking of myself less, I actually gain more. You know, that's why we only keep what we have by giving it away. And I didn't really fully quite grasp that concept until a little while in recovery, you know. And I've heard my friends in recovery, when I've heard them share years ago, talking about how they were going through change, and it was like another layer of the onion. I like to equate it like a snake getting its skin. And I feel like I'm going through another stage like that at the moment. You know, it takes a lifetime in recovery to unlearn everything that I came into recovery with. You know, and it's going to take me, I mean, I'm always a work in progress. It's going to take me time, and that's okay, because that's one of the most beautiful, loving things I can give to myself, is the ability to just be like, you know what, it's okay. I've not got this slipped. I'm never going to have this slipped. You know, when I'm at the top of one mountain, I'm just at the bottom of another. And I get that through HICNA as well. And HICNA has been my home group now for 3 years, 3.5 years. And I do service in the Friday night meeting. And you guys have heard everything that I've been through over the past 2 or 3 years. You know, my father passed away the year before last. My sister passed away last year. All of these things I've been able to get through clean, because people that I know in recovery have gotten through things clean. And that brings me out of that. That gets me into connection, out of isolation, and out of feeling alone. And that precious identification with other people, and that gives me that hope. And it gives me that, you know what, if they've gone through it, then I'm going to be okay. And, you know, I don't know about anyone else, but I can't get that down the crack house. I can't get that down the pub. I can only get it in the fellowship. And I purposely choose women to sponsor me that I know won't listen to my bullshit, that won't co-sign my bullshit. I purposely choose women to sponsor me that are my, that will be a mirror for me, that will teach me, that will show me what I need, you know, need to hear, what I need to see. And it's important for me to grow. The ability to be able to see and sponsor women as well, and see the light come on with them. And I feel like it's such a precious, sacred thing that we have in NA, you know, to be able to help someone, like, just light their path, show them how to light their own path, you know, to see them awaken spiritually. It's just phenomenal. It really is. You know, I've got so many precious, precious gifts. And for once in my life, it's not about the external. Now, I don't want to come across as that I don't think about having manageability, especially with step one, you know, like manageability is something that is very important for me, paying my rent, paying my bills, making sure I'm okay, you know. And I haven't always had that. You know, I've had plenty of times in recovery where I've needed help. And that's okay, you know. And it's more about having the internal manageability, you know, go within or go without, and creating and through prayer and meditation, creating a space within me for my higher power to exist. And in doing that, I create a space for love to exist and for love to reside, and for to be able to have some peace between my ears, because that's where the disease is centered. It's a fear-based self-obsessed disease, and it's an equal opportunity destroyer, irregardless of your socioeconomic background. It will take you. You know, I've got friends in recovery that come from completely and utterly different backgrounds to me. You know, I grew up in a council house in the age of eight, you know, and I've got friends that come into recovery with both parents. They were working, they had a beautiful family life and everything, you know. Just this fellowship is just so amazing, you know. It's given me, you know, it just seems like yesterday, I can't believe we're in June. I've just had my daughter here for Christmas, and she stayed with me for nearly the whole month, you know, and I've just been able to send off her birthday present this week, you know. I wouldn't have been able to, I wasn't able to do any of that when I was out there. You know, when I was seeing the children, and that would be supervised contact, I wouldn't use the morning of that contact. However, as soon as that contact was over, I'd go straight home and use. And I thought that was okay. You know, I've got a photo on my Facebook. It's in one of our private albums of me sitting, and I just look completely gaunt. My cheekbones are hanging out. Like, you know, my sunglasses are just sitting on my cheekbones. I was that gaunt and that tiny. And I thought I looked great. I thought I had the world. I thought, you know, I didn't have a clue. I was just very lost. And NA's given me myself back. It's given me, and not what other people think of me, not me trying to twist and manipulate this or that, and I'll be this version of me so I can get this or that. Me, you know, who I am, and allow myself to evolve and change in that metaphysical kind of process of recovery, you know, within me. And kind of roll with the punches. And I'm not always spiritual, believe me. I live in 6 and 7. I can be a right bitch. I can be a right bitch. And the disease can come out the side of my neck. And I have days where I'm extremely, and I can feel very vulnerable and very prickly and very exposed. And I can be very scared and very reactive. You know, and as long as I keep moving forward and I surrender, and I work the spiritual principles, then I'm giving myself a chance. And then, you know, making an amends to people, you know, that's more than just saying I'm sorry. I've got to change up my behaviour, you know, which can be a lot easier said than done sometimes, because I can be very stubborn. I don't always get this right. You know, I'm learning, and I'm doing my best to keep doing the next right thing. You know, I'm sitting here in my flat, looking around, thinking, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. You know, I can't thank you guys enough, my Hegner family, for being with me for the past 3.5 years and helping me in my recovery. You know, I've heard so many of you on here, my peers, walk through so many things in their recovery that it's like showing me that I'm going to be okay. you know, that if whatever comes up, as long as I keep my head down, keep my side of the street clean, mind my own business, I'm okay. You know? And I feel like as long as I keep myself open-minded, which can be a lot easier said than done, you know, I've got to get to God before my head gets to me in the morning. As long as I keep doing that, then just for today, I'm giving myself a chance. And my clean time is not a guarantee of me never, you know, a clean, my clean, just because I've got a little bit of clean time, that doesn't make me immune to relapse. You know, I've got to keep myself just as vigilant today as I did in my first 30 days. And, you know, I can be dragging my feet with some of my work I'm doing at the moment in recovery with my traditions work. And I'm not going to sit here and make it sound like I'm doing my work all the time, because I'm not. My sponsor would soon tell you that. You know, it's making sure that the the discipline of giving myself a chance of doing this, you know. It's not easy, but it's simple. And as long as I keep it simple, I'm okay, because I can complicate the flipping heck out of anything, you know. So, I feel like that's me, really. Thank you so, so much for asking me to share. I hope you've gotten something out of this. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you.